Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I have no relationships to disclose, especially from the water companies that I'm probably going to criticize now and probably want to get rid of me. Unlike my previous colleagues, I'm going to talk a little bit about how equitable access to water gets taken away rather than provided. And I'm going to focus on a case study that's happening in South Africa, but it's prevalent across the world. So to begin with, we know the health and social impacts of unsafe water. We hear these statistics often. We know that 10% of the global burden of disease, for example, is attributable to unsafe water and sanitation. We talk a lot about the Millennium Development Goal, and we know the aim is to halve the number of people without access to clean water by 2015. And we know and we hear that the world is on track to meet this goal. However, a critical point for me is who gets water and how much they pay for that water is as important as how many people get water. So driven by large multinational companies, prepaid water meters are a popular yet controversial model of delivering water to the poor. Basically, prepaid water meters, for those of you who don't know how it works, is a device that attaches to a water system that enters a household. The device, you buy credits from a store, enter the credits into it, and the cost equivalent amount of water is given to the household. It works similar to a prepaid mobile phone or prepaid cellular phone. The problem is if you don't have enough money to pay for top up or credits for this. And so, not surprisingly, there's been a global outcry against prepaid water meters. And for those of you who know the literature, particularly in South America, it's come to the fore. The city of Johannesburg, despite this, initiated an unprecedented rollout of prepaid water meters in 2003. They dubbed it Operation Green Amanzi, or translated, which means Operation Save Water. The campaign targeted poor black African townships who had previously received water at a flat rate in the region of $4 or so a month. There were three court cases that occurred. The first was where the community took the city of Johannesburg to court, and the court ruled in favor of the community, declaring these prepaid water meters unconstitutional and illegal. This was then appealed in the High Court of Appeals in favor of the city. The community then took it to the highest court in the land, which is the Constitutional Court, which unfortunately ruled in favor of the city of Johannesburg. So there are a number of problems with prepaid water meters, and a lot has been written about it at the political level, at the institutional level, for example. But I just want to, again, coming back to my earlier comments, focus on how a system is promoted and how a system of inequity and social injustice is promoted. And I want to focus specifically on notions of participation, as well as the role of psychoeducation in some of these campaigns. So before proceeding, I'd like to just talk a little bit about the fight for equitable access to water in South Africa. So I might have mentioned earlier that the equitable access to water is enshrined in the Constitution of South Africa. There's also a wonderfully socially progressive water strategy called the Free Basic Water Strategy, which basically suggests that all South African households have 6,000 litres of water for free per month. Okay. Now, the Free Basic Water on paper is very, very, very impressive. But in this case, the Free Basic Water strategy was coupled with the prepaid water meter strategy in the participation process. Given that most households in poor areas were unmetered, so they could just open a tap and get their water and then pay at the end of the month, the Free Basic Water strategy was coupled with this and promoted alongside with the prepaid water meters. In other words, people were told that to get their free basic water, they needed to have this prepaid water meter system. Now, there are, again, a number of problems. But one of the most important problems, I think, is that poor people, unlike the rest of Johannesburg, had to pay before they used water, unlike myself, for example, who pays after I use water. The second was that the poor water was disconnected immediately when they didn't have enough money, whereas my water is connected weeks, sometimes months, as long as a year to be, if I don't pay my utility bill. Okay. So that was the one issue that came up. Coming back to my main points, the flawed participation process drew a lot of attention. And there were a couple of things that happened in the way that this was promoted. For example, to promote the campaign to people, meetings were held, but meetings were held during the day or the early afternoon where most people who were working couldn't attend. There were demonstrations of how much 6,000 liters of water were in drums and so forth. But of course, for those of you working in the water sector know that 6,000 liters of water is not sufficient for a family, particularly a large family per month. And importantly, prepaid water meters were sold to communities as a way of receiving other services. So as many as 90%, according to one survey, of people were told that in order to receive flush sanitation services, to receive social grants, for example, they needed to adopt these prepaid water meters systems. And in doing this, Operation Save Water drew on a number of powerful discourses. And at this point, I want to mention that while there was lots of resistance, many people were actually convinced of the need for prepaid water meters. Like I said, the prepaid water meters as a means to receiving other social support. There was also discourses about taking control of your personal lives, paying for what you get, control over your own development and so forth. But importantly for me was the next step, and this was to educate the poor on how to use the free basic water. And this is some of the things I find most problematic about all of this. So Operation Save Water made a huge effort using community billboards, door-to-door visits, pamphlets and so forth to help educate people how to use their free basic water, how to use the 6,000 liters frugally to save money so that they didn't have to pay more for money. And this is what they, for example, what they promoted. Wash one sink of dishes per day. You can have 6 body washes per day, 1 bath per day, 2 toilet flushes per day, and so forth. Now, if you just stop for a moment and think, what if someone not only comes to you and decides to stop your water, but also tells you how many times you can use the toilet a day, how many times you can take a wash a day? It was, for me, a little outrageous. And joint, coupled with this was also discourses of joint responsibility. So in addition to all the legal battles that were won, there's still ongoing coordinated resistance on the ground with communities up in arms over this. So the fight for equitable access to water amongst the poor in South Africa underscores 2 very different understandings of the role of water in sustainable development. On the one hand, water is viewed as a basic human right and is of course necessary for health, dignity and development. On the other hand, in a water-scarce country such as South Africa, water is seen as a commodity that must be conserved through end users having to pay for it. In reality, however, the distinction between these two ideologies is somewhat blurry, and specifically in terms of where social responsibility for water access ends and cost recovery begins. In the South African case study presented here, the distinction between the two ideologies was contested specifically around this free basic water allocation. It's also important to acknowledge at this point that the South African water scene is perhaps not representative of many other countries in the global south. South Africa has been praised for its socially responsible water strategy because of this free basic water allocation, and certainly is on track to meet the Millennium Development Goal that it set itself. However, having said this, there are key elements of this case study that I think we can all learn from. And one of them is this issue of the psychoeducation campaigns that I find somewhat problematic. And part of this paper focused a little bit on the discourses surrounding that. And it's not just a function of academic curiosity from my part, but it stems from my concern, really, and others' concern, about the pervasiveness of how these things get sold in developing countries. Of particular interest to me is now the question of a private solution, how many times a person uses the toilet, is advocated for what is essentially a public problem. The individualized psychoeducational approach, of course, doesn't sit alone. It's part of a broader discourse of how we think about the poor and how we often try and encourage the poor to change the way they think in order to progress. And this individualistic lifestyles approach that implicitly attributes blame and, of course, remedy on the poor also serves to absolve decision makers, I believe, in many cases, to focus on what are arguably the true issues at stake here, and that is environmental concerns due to large-scale inequality. And this kind of individualized approach simply does not fit nicely with this. It fails to take into account inequality, structural disadvantage, and, of course, poverty. And community participation was the other thing I wanted to flag. And I've mentioned how, in many cases, the participation process was flawed. But it also occupies, generally, an uncomfortable space in community development discourse, with many critics highlighting how participation is used to reinforce power relations. And although Joburg's water argument was that the prepayment systems were widely accepted, this community consultation was widely criticized in the legal sphere, as well as in the press, as well as in other aspects of society. This kind of flawed, some would call tyrannical participation, serves to disguise a top-down development approach. So the water wars are likely to continue in South Africa, Africa, and globally. Prepaid water meters still remain quite a popular way of delivering water to the poor. I believe there's scope for multidisciplinary critical public health research to support advocacy efforts. Not that there wasn't, but it was notable to me how little, for example, public health research was drawn into all of this. And I think on a number of levels there are opportunities for researchers and so forth. In terms of basic health issues of dehydration, diarrheal disease, the storage of water, for example, in contexts where water is limited, hygiene and so forth, all in a context of a high prevalence of HIV/AIDS, where we know HIV-affected households need more water than average households. There's implications for healthcare of a number of disease outcomes that could be related to this. There are social aspects, the implications on women and gender, quality of life, social capital, for example, now having to ask a neighbor for a cup of water and that neighbor asks you, for example, to pay for it, because they're paying for it, dignity and so forth. There's also a huge opportunity, I think, for a critical development research agenda to focus on things like participation, which I've hinted at this, the politics of all of this, and especially body politics. I was fascinated at how the black body was contested and represented in all of this, not only in terms of which aspects the campaign focused on, but also in terms of resistance. Last year, there was a big march in Johannesburg where older women wore their underwear outside of their clothes and their soiled underwear to highlight the hygiene issues, implications of this, and marched to the city offices and threw their underwear at officials. And these kinds of very interesting kinds of ways of resisting this. So in conclusion, I think there is a need to be vigilant about how water privatization is constructed as being good for the poor. I think it's also we also need to be vigilant about how water privatization is promoted in context of poverty, and of course the implications for social justice. Thank you.